Blog Talk Radio.
Why do I find it so hard when I know in my heart I'm letting you down every day? Letting you down every day. Why do I? Thank you.
step to where your project title is simply to make it less scary. When you deal with a project title, fear isn't as much about rejection, although that's hard to admit, and about what you're going to do as you're not just worried about being rejected. No one is going to see it happen as you've been shut down. But a lot of people are going to laugh.
Can you hear me, Joe?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay, let me do some maneuvering here. I'm gonna edit this part out.
right.
I use Blog Talk, but it kind of, I can edit it out. But I need to move to another location because I'm at Panera. So let me see. I'm gonna do it in my car because my echo's so bad. All right. So yeah, we're gonna just talk about, I guess, Trump and the women's movement and Aziz Ansari. Is that how you say his name? How do you say his name?
I think Aziz Ansari. Yeah,
Aziz Ansari. And I had to check and look it up. I've never actually said it. And I'm not even a big fan of him. Like, I've never watched Master of None, anything. And I guess we could talk about TV if you want. I want it to be like free flowing, you know.
Yeah, I got you.
Just about stuff we argue with or talk about on Facebook that seems to be our thing. You know, we're not arguing. You know, good conversation. I think we actually have, not arguments, but.
We're able to skirt that line.
You said what?
I said we're able to skirt that line.
Yeah, I think it usually goes. I'm a little more fiery than you, but if you're so smart that it's like I can't get too mad. I can't get mad for you being dumb. Some people are so dumb. It's like, yeah, like you're an idiot. I can't talk to you. Like, what the hell? All right, I think I'm here. All right. I'm pretend like I'm starting the show and I'm going to edit all this out. But let me check and see if I can hear you on.
Sure.
Say something.
Hey,
say
what's
something
up?
Else. Damn.
This is Joe. I'm afraid to talk about his.
We're good. All right. I'm going to have to put it on speakerphone. Hopefully it doesn't sound too bad. Because my stupid phone volume doesn't get that high. All right. Let's start. Welcome to the RC Report. I am your host, RC Carlton, and I have with me a very special guest whose last name I should have tried to ask him before the show started. But I think it's Joe Matt. How do you say your last name, Joe?
You got it, Matt.
Yay, I got it right. Okay, I was hoping it was going to be some crazy pronunciation. Joe's probably my smartest Facebook friend, and I don't even know who we met through, at least on Facebook, but I wanted to bring him on the podcast to talk about television, Star Wars, the Me Too movement, Aziz Ansari, Trump, just a whole lot of issues that I think we can bring you because I'm pretty smart and Joe's pretty smart, and neither one of us are too extreme. Joe, on our page, or on my page, there was a lot of controversy over Aziz Ansari. There was an article in Babe magazine that basically this unidentified woman talked about a bad sexual experience that she had with them. It got a lot of attention in the media. It got a lot of attention on my page personally. What was your take when you read it?
I mean, when I first read it, I was just kind of horrified because I am a fan of his because I'm a big Parks and Rec guy. I haven't watched a ton of his stand-up, but I really like Master of None, too, so it was just kind of like, fuck, like, not him, too. And then I read it, and obviously, you know, it's not the same as, like, Weinstein or Spacey or these other people where, you know, it always felt like it was kind of in this gray area. And I think that's where it went off the rails, is that as soon as sexual assault gets thrown out there, a lot of people assume, no, it's obviously going to be this criminal thing. And so when it wasn't clearly that, I think that's where we saw all the backlash. And I think that's a distraction from what we should be talking about, which is just because you don't commit a crime doesn't mean it was a good experience for the other person. I think that's where we need to be focused on is, you know, we always talk about consent, but enthusiastic consent, making sure your partner is on the same page as you are. And I think that's what we need to be talking about. But too often now it's become, you know, the Me Too movement's gone off the rails and all this stuff, where I think most people, and especially women, they can tell the difference between what's a crime and what's uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think so too. I think we agree on that. I think, and I was just reading this guy who gives a lot of dating advice and a lot of, it turns into male advice too, called Dr. Nerlove, and I was just glancing at before thing, and he was saying, what about the messages and what we're missing, I think, from this conversation, and hopefully you and I could talk about the conversation missing in general, is what kind of messages are men being sent for us to act like this? Like, what kind of messages are we really being sent if, like, your goal is just to get this girl in bed and lay down with her, and your only line basically is you're not going to rape her? Like, that's not – like, what? How did we get there? And I'm not killing Aziz, but I'm going to say that – I think a lot of men, that's, like, their line. Like, can I get this girl to have sex with me? Whether it be she's somewhat intoxicated, but there'd be a line for most men. You know, however you can get that girl in bed, like, that might not be – we might need to reexamine that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the things with the Aziz thing is I think a lot of people, I think women looked at it and they were like, man, you know, that's something that's happened to me. And I think a lot of guys looked at it and were like, shit. I feel like they felt like, well, that's sexual assault. And then, like, have I done that?
We're all in trouble, yeah.
Right. And I think we need to try not to look at so much as, like, I'm in trouble so much as, all right, going forward, how am I going to act so that I never put someone in a situation where they're uncomfortable or where it could come back on you, but hopefully, you know, you care about the other person enough where your own safety isn't always your only thought process. But,
yeah, I think,
I mean,
it does kind
of. And you look at, like, pop culture, too, and, like, stuff is weird looking back. Like, even Superbad, which I love still, where Jonah Hill's character the whole time is just like, I want to get her so drunk that she'll sleep with me. And you're like, man, that's kind of fucked up.
Yeah, yeah. The message.
Where at
saying,
the time,
remember,
it was just like, oh, yeah, that's hilarious. And you didn't think about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, seems
for
okay,
second.
Yeah. There's, I can't remember. It might be Nerds or some movie where the guy, is Halloween, and I can't remember the actual name of the movie, but it's Halloween. He dressed up Darth Vader, and he tricks the girl into having sex with her because she thinks it's her boyfriend. And then she loves him because he's, you know, he's actually very good when he. But that's actually right. Like, you know, the stuff that when I was a kid, a lot of times they would put the woman up for sale to some degree on poker games. Like, what the fuck? Like, those messages. Like, what messages are we getting that so great and so exalted that if we trick a woman into it, that's okay, and we can offer our woman up as like a poker chip, offer her sexuality up. Like, just a lot of bad, crazy messages that we get, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's that idea that, like, oh, women aren't going to give it up easily, so you got to work for it. And I think if your idea of working for it is, like, oh, you treat her with respect and you just try to be a decent person,
yeah,
then that's fine. But too often it's like, oh, I have to coerce her. Let's get a few drinks, let's do this, let's do that. And you get to a point where it's just, I think the problem is it becomes all about you getting off, really, and it's not about the woman at all. And I think there's got to be some give and take there. I mean, to be fair to Aziz, he would go down on her, but then that doesn't immediately, like, clear him for whatever he wants.
Yeah. And that the whole situation is murky because there was some consent and there was no – well, there wasn't verbal non-consent and then he stopped. But it was just murky. And what about the – and we'll talk about the reaction. You hinted on that. But before I forget that, what about just how Babe handled it? I don't know if he followed the Ashley Danfield comments and the email that the writer sent to her. But just in general, what did you think of the article itself and how it presented the situation?
You know, I didn't think about it that hard originally. I read a Jezebel piece that kind of brought up the point where, you know, a year ago even, writing about sexual assault was generally something that wasn't a big thing. Like, there were certain writers, usually women, who would try to write about it and get it some publicity, but it never blew up. But now it's become this thing where it's like a prestige thing. Like, you want to get the next sexual assault story. And I mean, I think Babe probably saw this as an opportunity. And to be fair, you know, that's how journalists think to a degree. But I think they were probably too amped up that they got this story that they didn't think about how it would be received, the potential repercussions on not just the woman, but the movement. Because they really didn't present it in a way that kind of presented the idea that this isn't your normal, this isn't what we've thought of as sexual assault. And so it lost all the nuance. And I think that was a mistake on their part. They needed to do a better job of setting the table for what we're talking about here.
Yeah, I think.
And I assume with those emails and stuff, like, that they were the ones who sought out this woman, not the other way around, which I think is an important distinction when we talk about this.
Talk about that, because I didn't know that. I didn't know that. What, give me more information on that.
I just read that in that piece, and then I saw another woman on Twitter linked to, I guess the editor of Babe gave some interviews and mentioned that, you know, they heard the story through someone else, and so then they sought out this woman to get the complete story. But so, yeah,
gotcha.
So when people are like, oh, why didn't she go to the police? It's like, well, she didn't even go to them. They sought her out.
Mm-hmm. And I think it can be instructive, but it's hard to have an honest conversation about these things because you have the extreme. And I'm not saying that she should have said no is the extreme. I don't see the extreme of, like, I mean, I guess there was some extreme I saw on my page, but, like, victim shaming. You don't want to shame the victim. And, of course, we're two men talking about this, and I thought about having a woman, but I think it was smart enough to have the conversation. But you don't want to victim shame, but you still want to give her some accountability for being verbal. And at the same time, like, some of what I experienced online from it was that, like, just be quiet and listen to the woman and da-da-da-da-da. And, like, anytime a woman claims sexual assault or whatever, they're automatically right. Or if they say pay discrimination or whatever, that they're automatically right. It's a fine line, like, to try to converse and try to like, go through this stuff and talk about it, have a good intellectual conversation.
Yeah, it is. I think it's also a very emotional issue for a lot of people, and that obviously complicates things. One good, like, example to try to think about it that I heard recently, I forget the comedian, but this one was talking, I don't even know if it was sexual assault, but I think it applies well, where if your bike gets stolen and you tell that to someone, they're like, well, did you lock it? Maybe you did lock your bike, maybe you didn't. Either the way, you're not the one who did something wrong. So, like, when people say, like, oh, you should take this step, like, don't drink too much, don't do that, it's not necessarily bad to think about those things. Like, I think, obviously, I think if this woman could go back, she would probably be more firm in saying no. But that doesn't make it her fault if he's still... You know, she says, I'm uncomfortable, and then he's like, all right, how about you go down on me? That's not really the a good response there.
No.
Like, he needs to do better, where she could have done certain things that maybe changed the situation, but he's the one who's ultimately at fault. She didn't do anything wrong. She didn't force him to do something.
Yeah. And she didn't. I mean, she did say slow down at one point. But then again, he didn't force her, you know, which is why he's not at criminal charges or whatever. But it is just as a human being, it's like if somebody says slow down, I guess a guy's like thinking that's a yellow light and most people run through yellow lights. But maybe you ought to start to be like chill out or – but he had a goal in mind and he wanted that goal accomplished because he basically dehumanized her.
Lack of empathy. Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe people expect that from him because he's a celebrity, but he's just kind of a man and he had a goal. I think on that too, but it's like where I come from, if I got my bike stolen, a lot of my family would be like, well, you know, you shouldn't have went in that neighborhood. You shouldn't have, like, locked the bike up. You shouldn't have had a bike. Or, like, okay, if you go in a bad neighborhood and I'm telling this to one of my friends, it's like, if you go in a bad neighborhood, you don't deserve to be robbed. But it's reasonable to assume that you might be robbed. So it's like, you have to teach, I think, both. I think men and women, men should do better and not be fucking predators. And then women, we just have to be realistic about the world we live in and not blame you because you're naive, but, like, this is the world we live in, and if you go, and this is where I might get in trouble, but if you go to a man's house, he is not allowed to rape you. He's not allowed to sexually assault you. But he's going to be looking for sex. Like, it's a complicated thing, you know what I mean? Not to put yourself in certain situations. I don't think that's wrong to tell someone.
Right. I mean, I think there's a fine line somewhere here, and it's hard to walk on the right side of it. But I think that's almost one of the things we have to change, though, is like, oh, she's come to my house. That means I should expect sex. It means you should still be paying attention to her and communicating with her about where you guys are going from. And I think that's another people like, oh, it's that takes the fun out of it or blah, blah, blah. If you ask, it's like, if you both want to have sex, you're going to want to have sex, whether or not you actually talk about, like, if you talk about it, you're still going to want it. You're not going to be like, oh shit, you asked me, I'm killed the vibe. Like, that's not going to happen if you really want to have sex.
Yeah. I think a lot of guys are saying that too about, like, with the Zeke situation on the page, on the sports page, now we're switching over, but they were like, he took it, he pulled it off, and she pulled her own boobs out at the Mardi, well, what was it, St. Patrick's Day thing. I'm like, they're her boobs. She gets to choose if she wants to show them. So she obviously had a negative reaction to him pulling them out, but then later she showed. And then the guy's like, see, no, it's hers. Like, she gets to choose if she wants to flash everybody, not him, you know. But the way a lot of people think is just because, like, it's almost like if you talk about this on the page, like, if the man gets permission one time, he's got, like, the green light. Or if a
right, you have the green light for that one time if she gives it to you. It doesn't mean next time
not forever,
that you're good to go. Yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of men think like that. It's like, you get it forever. And then it can be confusing because, you know, obviously if you've got a wife, you've got a girlfriend, you don't have to ask permission every time to smack her ass. Like, but it's like, but you, in your heart, you know the lines of what's been established, and she's probably told you what she likes, what she doesn't like. You know, it's kind of, but a lot of guys confuse that with somebody else that might not be as established in your relationship. I mean, you just have to have, I don't know, men are bad at reading woman's signs, so that hurts too. But let's switch to the reaction. How did you feel about the reaction?
I mean, like I said, I think this is an emotional issue. I also think it's one of those things that we're viewing a massive change in how we look at these things and how we deal with them, and that always freaks people out. Like, no matter what's happening, it freaks people out. And I think that this movement is good. I think the way that we're talking about the Aziz thing, I think this is a good step, but it freaks people out. You know, everyone's always worried about a witch hunt. And, I mean, the reality is, you know, sexual assault has been massively underreported for years. Like, every study shows that. And, I mean, to be fair, there's going to be guys who are accused that are innocent because that does happen. But even, like, the most liberal estimate of that would say that, like, 1 in 10 guys maybe. And that's being optimistic on the guy's side. So I think the reality is the underreporting is still the much bigger problem. And that's what we still need to be focused on, from my perspective. And so I think people are just freaking out. And then once things settle down and we start moving more, like, once people get the idea that men aren't entitled to sex with women because she went on a date with you or went in your house or whatever, I think then we'll be able to have more constructive conversation, because right now too many people are just scared at the idea of, well, it's like you get the, like, oh, if you say something in the office now, you're going to be sexual assault. It's like, just chill out. Women aren't crazy. Like, I think there's this idea that, like, women are just going to go nuts now saying whatever they want, and that's just not the reality.
Yeah. And the thing is, too, about victimhood and about shame, and for anybody, but, you know, women are more susceptible to it in our society to being shamed sexually, is that it's not something that people naturally want to fake. Like, the amount of people that falsely accuse men of rape is a rather rare thing, and falsely accuse them of these sexual assaults. Now, granted, one part of the movement that I think is a weakness, not the movement itself, but just its origin, is that it started with, like, Hollywood. So you already – it's not real life. It's not real people. Obviously, these women were victimized, and that's wrong. But you're starting with people that have been very successful and millionaires, and then you can always say money. So when I hear people in bars, men, women, it doesn't matter. And when I hear people in bars, especially when I'm in the country area of where I live at, they was like, oh, yeah, they just want to get paid. They just want to get paid. And you hear that anytime there's an athlete or an actor or a musician, you always hear, oh, they want to get paid. They want to get paid. And it's like, to me, sometimes that drowns out the legitimate argument. But at the same time, who's going to report about Becky at the office that nobody knows that works at a Capital One is being sexually harassed? So it's like, it's a hard – It makes things more complicated, and people are easier to dismiss it because, you know, there's still people that think Bill Cosby, the women are after money. Like, come on.
Right. I mean, and that's the other thing, too, is there's all, like, if there's one accuser, you know, I obviously think, because statistically we know women don't usually lie about this for a lot of reasons, that if there's one accuser, I assume she's telling the truth, but I'm never going to be, like, definitively, like, that guy's a rapist or that guy's an assaulter or whatever. But there's a tipping point. Like, Bill Cosby, it's, like, what, 60 women now? And there's still people that are, yeah, he got framed, this and that, and it's just insane. But I agree. Yeah. Like, I've seen that as well, where it becomes, it's about this, money. And I think that's one of the good things about, off the top of my head, I can't think of the name of the organization that the women just started in Hollywood, but a big part of what they're going to do is have money for the average woman so that when there's cases, that they'll be able to access resources. And I think that's a huge
step. Yeah, I remember them saying that. And it too, it's like, okay, it depends on the situation. Like, some people are talking about they want the money, like the NFL Network guys that got accused. So you got this makeup artist who's been sexually harassed, without a doubt. A lot of girls either didn't deny it, or like Warren Sapp actually put the dildo on Twitter to show what he sent her for Christmas. Like, so she got sexually harassed in her job, left her job. You don't think she should be compensated? Like, when it's a work-related thing, you don't think these women should be compensated because these men couldn't control themselves? You don't think that they're owed some sort of compensation for having to get another job if they could get a job? Like, sometimes money is a recourse. That's why it's there in a legal form.
Yeah.
Let's switch to that heavy subject to start off with. give me your thoughts on the government shutdown, and who do you think ultimately will turn out the winners and the losers in the government shutdown?
Well, obviously, you know, you know me, anyone who doesn't, obviously, you know, I'm coming from a more liberal perspective, so I'll be open to, like, that fact. But I mean, from where I'm coming from, this is all pretty much Trump. And I'm not even saying, like, Republicans. I'm saying Trump specifically. Because, I mean, the reality is, if he never revokes the DACA policy that Obama had, there's not a government shutdown right now. And then, I mean, the Senate had almost worked out a deal earlier this week that was going to give him a lot of things. It was going to get more money for border security, not a wall, which maybe that's the problem. But the reality is, a wall is not even really going to help stop illegal immigration. So he's going to get money for actual things that would stop illegal immigration. They're going to get changes to the way our immigration policy works. And apparently there were still going to be too many people from, quote, shithole countries. So that was a problem for him. But he's getting all these changes that he wants. And even the people who are going to be allowed to stay under DACA, who, again, are people who came here as children. They didn't choose to break any laws. They've grown up in the United States. They are in every respect outside of birth and legality, they're Americans. They weren't even going to be able to sponsor their parents under the deal. So he's getting all these concessions. So Republicans could say they got to win. Democrats could say they got to win. No shutdown. And instead, he's just like, no, this doesn't work anymore. When 2 weeks ago, he was saying, oh, I'm fine with a straight DACA vote outside of everything else, even though that wasn't his policy, because he doesn't understand his policy.
No. So
he's standing in the way because he doesn't even know what he wants from day to day, hour to hour. If any other Republican is in power, even like Ted Cruz is in power, there's no shutdown right now. So this isn't this is definitely not the Senate's fault. I think there's some people in the House, like Freedom Caucus people, who are problematic. But the reality is this government would be functioning right now if there was any leadership in the White House. That's my perspective. As far as who wins, I have no idea, because on the one hand, I think it's, you know, Republicans are in a tough spot because they're in power. On the other hand, if maybe they'll be able to portray this as Democrats valuing illegal immigrants over the average American and national security. So I don't know which one of those narratives really comes through.
Yeah, it's. I think he loses, though, because he just got the damn tax cut. Apple had good news about building plants here or whatever the hell they do. They're bringing back, bringing money here, bringing business here. And it looked like he was starting to win, and people could say, every time it looks like he's actually doing something, he finds a way to shoot himself in the foot. It's absolutely amazing. Even on DACA stuff, like he said, he was at the meeting. He was like, yeah, I'll take a clean DACA bill. And then literally they have to sit other people like Tom Cotton and other conservatives in the meeting. I don't know if it was that meeting or the next meeting, to tell him that they don't want that stuff. Like, this is not what your constituency wants, because he's about to sell them out because he doesn't understand or he doesn't care. Scary how easy it can be to manipulate him. And I'm not a Trump, like, sky is falling kind of person. But especially after coming after the book, it's really scary how easily he can be manipulated. All you got to do is have the right thing on Fox and Friends, and you can get to him.
The other crazy part about that is when you watch that meeting, and if you have any understanding of what is going on, you realize it's a disaster. Like, he doesn't know what his policy is. But then you have all these conservative publications and news stations saying, like, oh, he proved the book wrong, that he understands things and he could run a meeting. He couldn't. Like,
no,
there's just such a...
Only if you look at the highlights. Only if you look at the highlights. Not if you watch the whole thing.
I mean,
always really low with him.
It's so low. It's incredible. Like, you think about what the bar was under George Bush, who obviously, like so many liberals, hated and despised and thought he was an idiot. It's light years further up than what Trump has. Like,
it really
he forms
is.
Complete sentences, and it's a win. And you're just like, my God, how did this happen?
It is really scary, too. And the thing that, just from hearing about the book, I didn't read the book. I've been tempted, but I listened to a lot of interviews with the authors, and obviously I heard endless media coverage. I mean, it makes so much sense. And again, I am not Joe's the liberal. I'm the barely hanging on rhino Republican, maybe moderate. I'm where Joe Scarborough and John McCain and even Lindsey Graham. I don't know what the hell Lindsey Graham's doing lately, but that's the kind of Republican I am. So let's put it on the record. But, like, dementia just seems right. If you look at him 10 years ago, what he could say, I even heard a thing about the government shutdown in 2013 under Obama, and he was able to form complete sentences enough to say it was Obama's fault. But now, like, he just speaks in, like, spurts and just hype and emphasizes certain words. Like, you really can see, like, the deterioration of this person. And if you go back to 1999 and 2000, when he was flirting, you could even say he was articulate. It's kind of scary.
He was. Yeah, I've read, like, excerpts from interviews, and you're like, wow, like, he's right about this, and he laid it out really well. Like, it's such a contrast that, yeah, it is disturbing, because it's hard not to wonder about his mental state from multiple perspectives.
Two things, and first, this will be the first. Do you think, and I've tried to look at it like this, do you think it's a a good thing. I can't think of a fancy word, but a good thing or a positive that our institutions could survive a man like this in office?
I don't think I can answer that until he's out of office.
Yeah, it's not over yet. It's not over. It's only been a
I mean,
year.
I think the key to looking at this, sorry to cut you off, but is how does this Mueller stuff play out? If he fires Mueller, does Congress react? If Mueller does find, if Mueller stays on and he finds something, does Congress react? I think that's, now obviously if Mueller doesn't come up with something, which would surprise me, but if he doesn't, then we're fine. But if either of those other two scenarios happen, that's when we're really going to be tested.
Yeah, that would stress the democracy. When you said surprise me, do you mean someone like under Trump that's close, or you mean actually find something on him?
I would be very surprised if someone close to him doesn't be busted. Personally, I would lean towards something with him. I think it's less likely to be a direct link for the campaign, which still seems to be getting a lot of the focus, but more likely to be a money laundering type situation.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he's always reacted strongest whenever his financial stuff comes up. I mean, he still hasn't released the tax concerns. That seems to be where he's actually concerned versus the campaign stuff, which I think would be much harder to prove, even if it happened.
Now, my other the other side of this that I wanted to look at was, what do you say, and I feel like this a little bit, it's hypothetical, but to some degree, what do you say to the part where, and we'll tackle what he's done to the culture and what he's done by attacking the institutions and maybe he's weakening them. But what do you say to the fact that maybe, like, he's not done a whole lot? He's got the tax cut, but that's not something that's unusual for a Republican to do. But that in his actions, he's reacted like a traditional Republican, even though he's shameful in words and kind of a sticks and stones may break my bones, or words never hurt me. But his actions are traditional Republican. And he's not really hurting that much because he's just talking shit on Twitter.
So, yeah, from the liberal perspective, the upside to his being president is Republicans have been much less successful in actually pushing their agenda. Like, if a Ted
their
Cruz...
suck.
Right. Like, if Ted Cruz is in office, much better. They probably get the healthcare thing done. I don't know if, like, a Kasich or a Bush would have actually continued to try on health care, which also might have been good for Republicans, because then they wouldn't have wasted all that time. They could have done tax quicker. They could be moving on to other things. I mean, yeah, the upside is he's ineffective. The downside is more from, I think, a foreign policy perspective, where you'd really like to have an adult in the room when you're talking about North Korea or Iran or Syria or whatever. Like, you want someone in charge who you trust to make intelligent, informed decisions. Obviously, Donald Trump is not that person.
No, he's not at all. And so, on the other side of the coin, which I think is very important, what do you think he's doing to our culture at large and our political culture?
Man, that sounds like a big question. the upside from my perspective is he's really invigorated people on the left, even people in the center to a certain degree. And I think actually even some Republicans who still are holding out, like yourself. Like, I think sometimes, I think there's been on the right, there's kind of been a dissent that led to Trump. And I think this has really awoken those people to how big of a problem that was. Before, it was like, yeah, Fox stretches the truth, but it works for us, so it's okay. And now they're kind of like, all right, we went too far. And I think that's a good learning thing. And, well, obviously, we're on the second Women's March today. So, you know, any other Republican wins, that's not happening, I don't think. Like, he's really driven people to be more active, and I think that's great. But like you said, it's the institutions that you worry about, because that on both sides, you've got these people who you know, Congress is just evil and you can't trust anyone because of this and that. Like, you know, there's people on the left who voted for Jill Stein. Those are the people who are digging in even more to their crazy theories. And then you've got the people on the right who are now just completely removed from reality, where, you know, they're still going on about Benghazi. And so I think he's made everyone more active. For people who weren't crazy, I think that's a good thing. But for people who are on either fringe, I think it's been destructive.
Yeah. For me,
so
I think it's coarsening the culture. I think it's coarsening the culture. It's coarsening our dialogue and poisoning it, even if it was going that way before. And it's making – it happened with Obama, too. It's almost like the president becomes a pop cultural thing, and, like, everybody feels like they can have it at – well, technically, I sound like a Nazi, but technically they can. But before, politics were like intellectuals, where the intellectual people were hanging out. Now everybody, it just seems so common that everybody has an opinion about politics, and a lot of these people are not well-informed on either side. But right now, the right seems to be highlighting it with fake news. But just to me, it's like, how can we go back? How can we put the genie in the bottle and have a normal president? I don't even know if our attention spans will allow us to have a normal president. Like, I don't know, Joe Biden would be too exciting, but like Kamala Harris or somebody like that, or a Jeb Bush, like Kamala Harris historically,
right,
maybe. But could we have like a normal president? Like, I can't see it going back.
Well, I mean, I think one of the things there, though, is like Obama was outside of his race, he was a normal president. But I agree, it's the discussion around the president has become abnormal, where, like, you know, I'll be open about it. Like, when people say, like, Trump is a piece of shit, I'm like, yes, I agree. The thing is, for me, it's selective to this president. Like I said, if Jeb Bush or Rubio was president, maybe even Cruz, I mean, I wouldn't say as strong things about that, about them personally. I wouldn't attack them personally as strongly as I attack Trump, because I think he's a terrible person. Whereas those are people I disagree with on policy. But I think for a lot of people, this is just the continue. Like, the next Republican, the next Democrat, they will also be a piece of shit. There's no selection for them there. It's the other side is evil. But for me, it's this single person is terrible. I disagree strongly with other people on that side, but I still think they're decent human beings on the whole. So I think that's where the issue comes. Yeah, I think we're on this descent that, I mean, I guess probably from the 90s, I think we've just been on a continuous descent, at least from the Clinton administration down, where it just gets more and more intense on each side.
Yeah, I want a Republican, not a Republican, I want a Democrat to run and say they want to restore honor and dignity back to the White House. I want a Democrat to say that, because if people didn't catch it, that was one of George Bush's slogans when he ran, that was a little subtle nudge at Clinton that they wanted to restore honor and dignity, but that would be a good thing.
I want a Republican to run in 2020 and say they want to restore honor and dignity to the White House.
They should, but of course you lose your base, with freaking 35% or whatever, that won't leave him no matter what. Amazing. Like, gosh. And I found myself, I can only listen to, like, Republicans like Bill Kristol and the Weekly Standard and some of the Never Trumpers, because I'm, like, on my last leg. Like, it's not many I can actually listen to and respect, like Flake or people that are willing to call him out when he's wrong, you know. But, yeah, I'm on my last leg. I'm definitely on my last leg with the Republicans. But it's not quite liberal enough to make that jump. Let's talk about something.
Right, you're in a tough spot now.
Yeah, it's tough. It's not easy. And then it just means both sides end up hating me. We're a little behind, so we won't talk about it too much. Well, I mean, not behind on the podcast, but behind with when it came out. But what did you think of Star Wars, The Last Jedi?
The first time I saw it twice. So the first time I saw it, like, I enjoyed it the entire time I was watching it, but as soon as it was over, I was kind of like, I was hoping for more, and I still kind of feel that way after a second viewing. I think, what's the like, Las Vegas crazy decadent planet? I think that whole portion of the movie is still not very good,
mm-hmm.
but I think I have a better I have a better understanding of what I think he's trying to do there, where he's trying to show, like, outside of just this war we've been watching, like, the actual effects. Certain people are getting rich, and we've got these downtrodden kids and stuff who are probably, like, stolen off another planet, another slave, basically. Like, I think Rian Johnson, the director and writer, he's trying to show us the broader scope. I just think it could have been done better from that perspective. One big issue for me was Poe and General Laura Dern, where...
You know, I didn't realize it was Laura Dern until, like, I just wasn't paying attention. I heard it the other day, and I was like, oh, my God, it's Laura Dern from a basketball website because of her little relationship with Bear Davis. I just wasn't paying attention during the movie enough to realize it was her.
But, yeah, I mean, one of my big problems there is the whole movie basically relies on them not communicating. Because that's the whole reason that Finn and Rose go, the whole reason that they're able to get betrayed and the plan doesn't work and all this stuff happens. All they needed to do was talk. Like, he needs to not be an asshole. She needs to just be like, yeah, he's kind of a hothead, but ultimately he's an important part of the Rebels. So I should talk to him and explain him my plan and why it's a good idea. But instead, they both just shut each other out, and a bunch of people die. And it's really the two of their fault.
Yeah.
But at the end of the movie, he's basically the leader now of the Rebels, and she's a hero. And you're like, wait a second. These two people, like, really deserve some blame for what happened, but we're just going to kind of skip over it. That was a problem. I mean, I still like it. I don't know how did you feel about Snoke being offed so easily? And how did you feel about Rey's parentage? Those are my two big questions.
That didn't bother me. That actually made sense with the theme, and I don't think it's like a red herring like a lot of people, because I think a lot of people are just invested that she's, I don't know, this is not a real rumor or something, but she's Obi-Wan's granddaughter or whoever the hell, whatever her parentage is.
Yeah.
But I liked it that she was just a nobody, and the last shot in the movie was about like a nobody being inspired. And I liked that part, that they didn't just give us what we automatically thought. Snoke being off so easily. I don't like the character, so I'm willing to forgive it. But I was like, really? He's just, like, super powerful, and you just tricked him that easy? Like, I just don't like the character. I think there's too much of straight emulation of the previous, not the previous, but the original trilogy. Like, you can give nods without literally having an apprentice, literally having another Palpatine character, literally having another Luke character. Like, I don't think you just need to repeat the archetypes and tell the same damn story. Like, that bothers me. We're seeing it the second time.
Yeah, because those two things have been two of the things that have really gotten a lot of attention and a lot of criticism, and those are my two favorite parts of the movie, the choices they made there. Because I think the Rey's parentage thing
did
is...
It.
The Rey's parentage thing is so good to me.
It's pleasing. It felt good to me, too. But the Kylo Ren killing Snoke, it felt good emotionally, but if I didn't think about it intellectually, it was okay. But I guess he kind of tricked him, didn't see it coming or whatever. But this guy is so powerful that he can get into their minds and meld them from separate locations, so he didn't see that coming. Really? You can make these two people get into each other's heads, but you didn't see that coming. But I'm not
that part bothered me a little too. Like, on rewatch, I feel like Kylo is kind of I think at that point he's smart enough to know how far into his head he is, and so his thought process, I feel like, was very selective there, where he was just like, because Snoke is saying like he's going to strike down his true enemy. So I think in his head he's not thinking a specific person.
What I liked about it was.
We don't care about Snoke. He's just kind of this, like, in the background evil dude. Where, like, with Kylo, we have actual investment in this character. So making him the ultimate bad guy going forward, I think, is a stronger position for the series to be in. And then as far as Rey's parentage goes, if she's somehow related to one of the Skywalkers, it just becomes too much of an incestuous story where it's all about the Skywalkers. We're like, we have this huge galaxy, all these, you know, different species and races battling each other, and it's about just this one family over six plus movies. That just sounds lazy to me. And so, and also, did you see a Blade Runner?
I didn't. I wanted to see it. My son got me to see a Jackie
Chan. Okay, well, I won't bring up my point then. But that movie also makes a choice. I think makes it a significantly better movie. But I mean, yeah, on the whole, I'm 100% with you on. It's repeating too many beats, less so than The Force Awakens, but it's still, we've seen too much of this already. Like, there was a piece in Vox where this woman wrote about, she didn't think the movie went far enough. Like, she liked the idea of, like, Rey and Kylo joining forces and seeing where that would go, which would probably have really drove people off a cliff.
Yeah, people couldn't handle
it. But I think that would have been more interesting.
My biggest problem with the movie is that... Okay.
And, you know, it's just such a black and white universe that I'd like a little more gray. That's actually the one thing I liked about Benicio Del Toro's character, where he's just like, you blow them up today, they blow you up tomorrow. It is what it is.
Like, who cares?
Yeah. I dug a little bit of gray in the movie.
Yeah, there's got to be some mercenaries in war. Like, everybody can't just be like, oh, we know they're good and we know they're bad. But my biggest problem with the movie is that, well, besides the fact that I'm not into the ship stuff in Star Wars, that's never really amazed me. And half the movie was, like, on the ships and outer space and doing that kind of fighting. But I understand that's part of Star Wars. But literally, they were kind of in the holding pattern. And I felt like the movie, for a long period of time, in the second act, was in a holding pattern. It's like, we're just waiting for this thing to happen. Like, there wasn't enough immediacy in the plot to draw me in.
Yeah, I think that's
I guess I needed the stakes to be higher at different points. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point. Well, like I said, I think, you know, the rich people planet was supposed to be, you know, kind of the invigorating part of the middle of the movie. And I think that's the least successful part of the movie. And I think that goes to your point, because we're not – the stakes never felt high there.
Yeah.
And I think I agree. Like, I think it opens great. I love that opening where they take out the dreadnought. And I think the ending is strong. But I agree. You've got this kind of middle hour where it doesn't feel like much happens.
Yeah, I've been reading that, and Rian Johnson actually gave feedback on this, that a lot of people didn't like the Luke ending, which is like my favorite scene in the movie, but people didn't like that. What was your take on that?
Which scene? I misheard you.
Being a hologram and fighting Kylo Ren.
Hologram?
The ending. Yeah, but I've heard that. I don't think most people disliked it, but I think people that didn't like it are very vocal, is what it sounds like.
Yeah, you know, it works for me. I mean, because I think it works even better when he does, like, the little shoulder brush, like, come on, man, bring it. Where it's like,
yeah,
he's not even there. And also, I mean, the whole time when he showed up, I was like, why does he look all younger? Did he, like, shave? Like, did he, like, trim his beard and dye his hair? Like, what did he do in between? And I was like, oh, the hologram. It makes sense, though.
Yeah, he's ready, yeah. I didn't see it coming, which I thought was cool, until a certain point in the fight, I was like, oh, shit, it's not him. But I think it was when they wanted the audience to see it. I don't think I was ahead of it. So I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty cool. I thought Luke going out that way made me sad, but I guess maybe, you know, it's time to move on. So I liked that, and it was The Last Jedi, and it all seemed appropriate to me, and I enjoyed it. But I said we would talk about Trump. I think we've covered a lot. But let's talk about, you're big on this, and I'm going to try to send you, sent a little survey around. Give me your top five movies and top five TV shows, and maybe we can describe, or just give me your top five, and I'll just ask you questions about a couple of them, and you can describe them. And if we've seen them both, if I've seen both of them, then I'll talk about it with you. So give me your top five movies.
I always like to go from five to one, because I think you leave the best for last. It's always more interesting. I really have like four movies that I'm like all in on. I'm like, these were the four movies. And then the fifth one kind of is muddled in my mind. Right now, I'm leaning towards Logan as my number five.
Okay.
I just think you know, we've had so many superhero movies, and so, like, I generally enjoy them. Like, I thought, like, Thor and Spider-Man were really good this year. But they have a general same feeling from movie to movie. And this one, I think it's because it was a superhero movie that was really, like, we're going to bring some finality here. And that allowed you to emotionally invest in it. And also, it's just really fucking violent. So, like, I think it's the inverse of Deadpool, where Deadpool was like, we're doing all this super violence because we want to be edgy. And then Logan was, this is super violent because this would be the reality of this situation. Like, if you had a guy with flaws, he would just mutilate people's bodies. Number four, I'd go Dunkirk.
Okay.
It's just... I saw it, that's, I've seen my top four twice, and the second time it even hit me a little more emotionally. I think it's, you know, it's very subtle. It's not slamming you in the head with, like, this is an emotional scene, but I think it's just got a kind of a quiet power to it, and obviously it's just super. The cinematography, the direction is incredible. Number three,
and Chris
really,
directed,
really
close. Right? Am I right?
Yeah, so he should finally.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, so he should finally get in for a Best Director nomination, although it looks like he's going to lose to, what's his name, Guillermo del Toro, probably, for Shape of Water. My number three, and I, like I said, the top four are real close, top three are even closer. Get Out's my number three.
Okay.
And
now,
if
is that as good as people say, or is it like some people feel like people really like, so it's being pushed, but I guess you're saying it's number three, but you really think it's a really good movie, or is it more the subject matter that's being covered?
I mean, I think it's both. One thing I'll definitely say, if you're ranking movies on the experience of watching them in a theater, it's number one.
Okay.
Like, I don't think, because it's a movie where everyone gets so... I don't even know. Like, some people find it hilarious, and then it's disturbing, and you're just on the edge of your seat. And, like, I mean, I'll just give a part of, like, you've seen it, right?
Yeah, I've seen it, yeah.
Like, I never could have imagined a situation where, like, even to take race out of it, just where a guy would be choking a woman at the end of the movie, and you would be rooting for him to kill her.
Yeah, which
like
is hard
everyone
to do.
In the movie is like, yeah, everyone's rooting for a guy to just strangle a woman at the end of the movie, and that alone is just like, how did you pull that off? That's insane.
Yeah,
but I mean, I think it's really entertaining. But and I think that's the key is so often you have like these message movies, like even Post, which I thought was a good movie. I saw it the other day, but it's just it's not subtle at all in what it's doing. And I think that kind of distracts from the power of it, where Get Out is doing so many things, and some of them are subtle. Like, I've heard, like, I never thought about, but I've, you know, I've seen, like, think pieces that are about, like, there's the one Asian guy at the auction, and how that plays into, like, what Asian Americans' role is in, like, giving white people an out and saying, like, oh, there's the good minority that the system solves it up. And, like, that's not something that even occurred to me. And I'm just like, fuck. Like, he put so much thought into this movie. Yeah, it's a crazy layer. Even when Allison Williams, like, when she's eating cereal and she's just dipping in the, like, Fruit Loops into the milk. So she's, like, not actually, like, mixing the colors and the white. And you're just like, what? Like, is that, I don't even, like, is that a real thing he thought of? Probably. Like,
Sometimes, like, even the things that are accidental in shows and in movies like this, sometimes maybe they're accidental. It's like they built a world that's so awesome that things like that either happen accidentally or we see them and draw it there because there's an experience that you get from a good movie or good art that you make interpretations based on the environment that's been created.
Exactly. And I think that is one of the signs of great art is when you can do that. And I mean, sometimes people are just pulling bullshit out of their ass, but Like, I think yeah. with that movie, there are so many things to point to and make a reasonable case that, like, all right, this is what this movie is doing right here.
Yeah.
My number two is Lady Bird.
Okay.
I have some friends.
And what's the concept of that? That's the one I think people aren't as familiar about.
Yeah, okay. So that's Greta Gerwig's the writer and director. Obviously, probably most people who don't know anything about Lady Bird don't know who Greta Gerwig is, so that's probably not helpful. But it's inspired, like, it's not based on, it's like, she's not, like, writing about specifically her life, but it's inspired by where she grew up in Sacramento. And so it's just following this girl who's going through her senior year in, like, 2002 Sacramento. And it just kind of explores her life and the people around her. I have had friends tell me, they're like, you always overrate coming-of-age stories. So maybe I do.
But evidently a lot of people have overrated if that's the case, because it's gotten a big critical response.
Right, yeah. It's one of the, like, three or four legit contenders for Best Picture. Obviously, it had the record on Rotten Tomatoes for a while. But one of the things, I'm a sucker for dramedies. Anything that can mix, like, if you can make me get emotional from, like, a sadness or inspired point of view, but then also move me to tears, like, making me laugh, that's what I'm here for. And my top two both do that. The other thing I really like about Lady Bird is it's not a movie that's just totally stuck on its main character's perspective. Like, it gives you insight into the other characters. Like, it doesn't mm-hmm. treat the other characters as just ways for the main character to progress in her story. Like, you get the feeling that these are real people around her.
Mm-hmm.
And then number one... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was going to prompt you to get to number one.
Okay, yeah. My number one is The Big Sick, because that really did those things. Like, I legit was, like, on the verge of tears laughing, and then later on because of emotional stuff.
And what's the concept?
I mean, it's just a really well-written movie, and I mean, personally, like, there's been a lot of, like, obviously there's always great performances across the board in, like, the different categories, best actor, best supporting actor. I really, for me, Holly Hunter gave the best supporting, I think, work of the year for me in that movie.
Okay.
As the mom
go ahead,
that.
Got anything else?
No, I mean, those are my top five.
We're gone over an hour, but if there anything else you want to say about any of those movies?
I mean, I'm really hoping The Big Sick can crack the top 10 for Best Picture, just because. But, yeah, I mean, those are my five.
A few years ago. Uh-huh. I'm behind on movies, but when you talk about them, it makes me want to get back into them. I kind of gotten movie and TV fatigue. Just there's so much, especially television, there's just so much out there. And it's just like, and I was so into following everything. It's just, I think I've gotten tired. So maybe you can ground it, because there's a lot of still good stuff out there, but it's just so much out there, especially in the realm of television.
Yeah, I agree. TV is where I have problems keeping up at all, because, like, if comedies, I think I do pretty well, because you're like, all right, I just, 20, 30 minutes, easy. Like, I can do that anytime.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like, and especially once you get behind in a drama and you're like, okay, I need to knock out 12, 50-minute episodes. Yep. And you're just like, fuck. That's,
it's like
work. Forever.
It really is. Even if you enjoyed the show, like, I enjoyed the last season of Mr. Robot, but I felt like there were two or three episodes in the middle, or maybe two episodes. I'm like, I didn't really feel like watching it. And then when I got through those episodes and I caught up on a weekend, it was great. I hit four. But it's like, shit. Like, do I really want to spend 4 or 5 hours catching up on this dark shit? And that's what I like. Like, it's not, you know, it's not an easy, you know, there's a scene where a guy's chopping another guy up with an axe. So, like, is this how I want to spend my fucking Saturday? Like, it's like,
that's why I've completely fallen off the Marvel Netflix shows. I'm just like, you know what? I'm never going to keep up with these. I hope other people enjoy them. I just can't do it.
I've dropped off some of them, too. Like, I want to watch The Punisher. I never was impressed with Daredevil. I like Jessica Jones. I feel like I only watched Jessica Jones, not even Luke Cage, which is a black man. I feel like I'm ashamed that I didn't watch Luke Cage. But I did watch the first episode of Black Lightning, so people don't get on my case. But
how
but
was
yeah,
that?
Just it's just like it's a lot. Oh, you say how was it?
Yeah.
It was really good. I'm like I was shocked that I enjoyed it that much. And I'm sure like these CW shows usually disappoint me, at least by season two. But a really solid pilot, and I'm a big fan of pilots. Like I could watch pilots like a whole weekend and just judge and try to predict if a show's gonna work or not. I love pilots. But it was really good. It was
yeah,
strong,
no, I'm with
good
you.
Action.
I love watching like 30 different pilots, but then it's like, oh, now I got to stick with the show. I don't know.
Superhero, I didn't see. First one on television, literal television, that like had a black world, and it wasn't a big deal. It just had black characters in it, but that wasn't necessarily the theme. But it just introduced the black world, and I liked that a lot. I'm sure Luke Cage does that, but I didn't see it. So sorry, people. But it introduced network television. It introduced the black world. But it wasn't the same thing. It wasn't like it didn't have an agenda. It just had black characters in the inner city, and that was their world. And I thought that was important.
Right.
And good, too. Very well executed. they've gotten to superheroes. Well, I haven't even fucking heard of these superheroes. I've never heard of Black Lightning. Like, some of these superheroes at this point, and I grew up reading comics, I don't know who the fuck they are, especially on the DC side where I'm weaker. Like, I don't even know who the fuck they are anymore. So
Someone on the IBS page for TV and movies said they like were like this is like Static Shock, and I was like, yeah, that's the only black character I know that does lightning stuff, like the Static Shock cartoon from 15 years ago.
Yeah, so it's like okay, but you know, I'll give it a shot. Just because I heard it was good reviews, I did watch it. That's because he's a black superhero. Anytime you can get that, I'm willing to give it a shot. But, Joe, we've had a good conversation. I hope the people enjoyed as much. I'll do some editing, and I'll let you know when it's up. Thank you for coming on with me.
Yeah, it was a pleasure, man, anytime.
All right. Have a good one.
You too.